I'm glad you're here. It's time for us to begin tonight. We're studying in John chapter 4 tonight, lesson number 5 on the life of Christ. Geographically, we're moving from Judea, Jerusalem, on up to, eventually, the area around the Sea of Galilee. We just finished studying John chapter 3, and we talked about the fact that in John chapter 3, you read of Jesus for the very first time teaching Nicodemus. We talked about what the theme of his message to Nicodemus, that the theme of his message was about the kingdom. But we also talked about the fact that in talking with Nicodemus, he spent a lot of time dealing with the contrast of what with what. Nicodemus was thinking fleshly and earthly. Jesus was trying to instill some spiritual truths. The interesting thing is, we go on to John chapter 4. Jesus will have an opportunity to talk again, to teach once more. And interestingly enough, in John chapter 4, as he deals with this woman who's at the well, a Samaritan woman, we're going to find that what is her mindset in terms of spiritual or physical? She's thinking fleshly, physical. And Jesus is going to try to take another person's physical, fleshly mindset and turn it to the spiritual. And you think about it, Jesus, before he came to this earth, was at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus is spirit. But Jesus took the form of a bondservant. He came to this earth and took on the same fleshly body that you and I have. And when he came in the flesh, he found mankind who, although created in the image of God, he found mankind focused on the flesh and not the spirit. It's interesting how often we're going to see Jesus trying to get man to turn from the flesh to the spirit, to stop thinking about the things that are on the earth, but to think about the things that are above. And that's going to be a lot of what Jesus has to say and what he's trying to do and what he's trying to teach and what he's trying to get us to think, is to set our minds on the things above. And we're going to talk about that in John chapter 4. So real quickly, we covered a little bit from lesson number 5. We began talking in Luke chapter 3 about the fact that John the Baptist was imprisoned. And what prompted John the Baptist's imprisonment?
Well, really, Herod's wife didn't like him saying you can't have her, or that she couldn't be with him, so...
All right. So again, it was because, and we made the point that John had been telling Herod that his marital relationship was not right. And we made the point that he told him just once, he had been saying to him, again, it was something, it was part of his conversation. And we talked about the complex relationship that Herod had with John the Baptist. They eventually had him put to death, but that he enjoyed listening to him. And so that's what prompted John's imprisonment. And then we talked about from there in Mark chapter 1, in verses 14 and 15, where did Jesus go and what was his message? First of all, where did he go? Where is he on his way to? We just talked about that. He's on his way to Galilee. We talked real quickly at the end of class last week. What was, again, if you had a 4-point sermon outline of what Jesus was preaching, what are the 4 points? Okay, the time is fulfilled. The kingdom of God is at hand. The need to repent and the need to believe in the gospel. So again, that was the outline, as it were, of Jesus preaching and teaching. And again, when we look at Luke chapter 4 and verses 14 and 15, Luke chapter 4, verses 14 and 15, it says, "Now Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through all the surrounding districts, and he began teaching in their synagogues and was praised by all." So again, the response, the result of his preaching was that the news of him spread. Again, that he was preaching the gospel, the news spread. And it says there in verse 14, he was teaching in the synagogues and being praised by all. So we see again Jesus on his way to Galilee preaching the gospel, preaching the good news. Now as we go on, what news? Well, first of all, before we begin, let's go ahead and read now. Let's turn to John chapter 4, and we're going to be spending some time in John chapter 4. It might help if I turn to John 4 instead of Luke 4. And if I can get someone to read, let's start with just verses 1 through 10. John 4, 1 through 10. Randy?
John 4, 1 through 10. Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself was not baptizing, but his disciples were, he left Judea and went away again into Galilee. And he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a city of Samaria called Sychar, near the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, being weary from his journey, was sitting thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. There came a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Therefore the Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, since I am a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water."
All right, thank you. So when we go back to the first couple of verses in John chapter 4, what was the news that had prompted Jesus to depart for Galilee through Samaria? What was the word going around? All right, so the word, what the scuttlebutt was, as it were, is that Jesus is baptizing more people than John. Now, John makes the point, was Jesus himself actually doing the baptizing?
No.
No, but his disciples were. And so, what's the connection between Jesus and his disciples baptizing now more people than John? Why would that cause Jesus to depart and go to Galilee? Okay. Again, Jesus is gathering a lot of attention. A lot of attention. Even the disciples of John, Jesus, they're aware of this. Who else is aware that a lot of people now are flocking to Jesus, that he's baptizing a lot of people?
Pharisees,
rulers of the Jews. They know about his popularity. They know about how many people are thronging to him. And so, we see here in the first couple of verses, again, because of this fact, and it says, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John. So again, the Lord knew that the Pharisees knew. He knew what was in their heart. If you turn to John chapter 7, if I can get somebody to read verses 1 through 8, John chapter 7, verses 1 through 8.
After this, Jesus went about in Galilee. He would not go about in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now the Jews' feast of booths was at hand. So his brothers said to him, "Leave here and go to Judea, that your disciples also may see the works you are doing. For no one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For not even his brothers believed in him. Jesus said to them, "My time has not yet come, but your time is always here. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about it that its works are evil. You go up to the feast. I am not going up to this feast, for my time has not yet fully come."
All right, so when you look at verse 1, again, it says that Jesus was walking in Galilee, for he was unwilling to walk in Judea. Why? It's exactly, and he said, "It's not time, right? My time is not yet at hand. It's not time for me to lay down my life." He has more teaching to do. We see here in John chapter 4 already, Jesus is aware that the Pharisees know about his attention, his popularity, that the more people now are coming to him to be baptized. And just like we see in John chapter 4, he knows that, again, this time to leave, his time is not at hand. It's not time for, again, he's got a lot of work to do. And we'll see a comment by Jesus in, later on here in John chapter 4 about the fact that, again, he has work to do. He has a lot of things to accomplish. And it's time, again, that he move to those places and find those people in which he can do the work that God has sent for him to do. So again, the news that prompted Jesus to depart was the fact that he knew that the Pharisees knew that he was baptizing more than John was. And so we read then in John chapter 4, in verse 3, that he left Judea and went away again into Galilee, and he had to pass through Samaria. He had to pass through Samaria. So we need to talk about the fact of we're now talking about Samaritans.
Before you get too far ahead, can you kind of explain verse 2 to me why it seems to be, like all the versions I have it in the first as opposed to...
Well, it's a good question in terms of, again, who wrote the Gospel of John? John the Apostle. And so we read then in verse 1 of John writing about what Jesus knew. What we read about in verse 2 is John, the author of this gospel, as we're making a parenthetical statement, not necessarily at the time of Jesus departing to go through Samaria to Galilee, but this is John when he wrote this gospel, parenthetically putting in the statement there in verse 2. That although Jesus himself was not baptizing, but his disciples were. So this is John, by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, after the fact, going back and simply clarifying the point that, again, it wasn't technically Jesus who was baptizing, but his disciples. So again, it's a parenthetical statement of the author after the fact. Mickey and Randy?
It's interesting to note that the parenthetical statement is an inspired statement.
Yes.
But much like our grammar, it becomes a brief explanation by the inspired writer of what he's just said.
Right.
You see it again in verse 9.
Right. So it's, you know, by inspiration, he says in verse 1 that the word is Jesus knew that the Pharisees knew that, again, Jesus was baptizing more than John. John then, again, by inspiration, goes back and clarifies. It's not actually that Jesus himself, but his disciples. Randy?
Well, we're on the topic.
Yes.
The baptism that Jesus' disciples are performing is technically the baptism of John. Is that correct?
This is not baptism for the remission of sins, right.
But it is baptism
of repentance. Yeah. Yes.
Deeds of repentance.
Yes.
Which is that God told them to do this. I think we might have talked about it previously, but I just wanted to get it straight in my head. The only reason we know that this was a command of God is because it was written in the New Testament. There's no reference in the Old Testament to the baptism of John. There's reference in the Old Testament to John the Baptist coming in the very way of old, but not specifically his baptism.
In terms of the authority of it, that it's commanded by God? Well, again, I mean, the first passage that comes to my mind is Matthew 21, 23 to 27, where Jesus asked the question, was John's baptism of God or of men? And again, we know that it was not of men, it was of God. God had commanded this baptism. And that's when we talk about Jesus being baptized by John to do what? To fulfill all
right.
Jesus himself, the Son of God, said, I'm doing this because it's righteousness, to fulfill righteousness. This is what I have to do because it's commanded by God.
I guess the reason it comes to mind is in our Acts study, there in chapter 19 of Acts, or I guess it's 18, passage that we're in 19, but Apollos was a little confused about that. He said
sure.
He was mighty in the scriptures, and he was convincing people that Jesus was the Christ, but he was only acquainted with the baptism of John. And I just thought how odd that is. Every time I read this, I think how odd that is that, you know, this much time later, he's still baptizing people into John's baptism. And how that can possibly happen. And so that's why we're reading this, and I'm thinking, okay, well, so this is where it was happening a lot. And now at this point, his disciples are baptizing more than John's were. So there was a lot of people
yes.
who were baptized into John's baptism.
Yes.
Yeah,
remember when we talked about John the Baptist, what was the numerical term that was talked about in terms of the amount of people coming out to him? Multitudes, yeah. I mean, you're right, there was a lot of people. And now again, we read of Jesus knowing that the Pharisees know, it's kind of like, I know that you know that you know. Jesus knew that the Pharisees knew that more Jesus and his disciples were baptizing more than even John was at this point in time.
And then Paul kind of clarifies in Acts 19:4, Paul said John baptized with baptism of repentance, telling people to believe in him who was coming after him. That is Jesus.
Right. All right. Good questions. So we get in verse 3 again that it says that he left Judea, went away again into Galilee, and had to pass through Samaria. Interesting choice of words. It says, and he had to pass through Samaria. And in fact, at that time, when Jews in Judea had to go to, in fact, here, like I said, I don't have maps built into my PowerPoint, but I should. Oh, great. Why is that? I got an error message from a quick verse anyway that it shut down. And this is when things go wrong. I had the map ready to go. We've studied from the geography long enough. If you went from a straight line from Jerusalem to the Sea of Galilee, where did you pass through?
Samaria.
You passed through Samaria. Would all Jews, with the attitude they had about Samaritans, would all Jews pass through Samaria on their way to Galilee? Oftentimes they would go around. Just why? So where did this, again, yes, Chris?
You emphasized had to go through Samaria. So I kind of looked that up to wonder, you know, what word did they use for had?
Okay.
And I don't know which definition to apply to it, but there's the had that we're forced to, and there's the had that he was destined to, and which I kind of would like to use, because we get to the woman of the well, and he gets to talk to her.
Yes.
It wasn't, I don't know if it was against his will, or, you know.
No, but that,
that
second definition was what?
Concerning what Christ was destined finally to undergo.
Okay. So, no, it's interesting because the fact of the matter is that did he have to? I mean, was he, did somebody compel him to? No, this was a choice. But again, did he have something he wanted to accomplish? Was there some teaching he wanted to do? Did he have some knowledge that perhaps, again, there was going to be an opportunity as he passed along the way?
New King James actually says that he needed to go through
some. Okay, he needed to. That's interesting. So, no, it wasn't a matter of being compelled to, but again, I think he knew of the need to, that he needed to go through there. Let's talk about why the issue of Jews in Jerusalem not wanting to even go through Samaria. Where does that all stem back from?
We have the verse up there, 2 Kings 17, but it's when they were carried away to captivity, and then people from other nations were brought into the area of Judea, which then intermarried with those that were left and created a mixed race that then lived in the land and have been there since that time, who worshipped idols at the time and were having problems because they were being attacked by lions, and therefore complained to the king at that time of the people that brought them in. I think it was the original.
The Assyrians.
The Assyrians. And then so they brought some of the priests who obviously knew God so well that the Israelites got taken into captivity, who then taught these people to a little bit about God, but they chose to see God as just another God. So they went ahead and continued worshiping their idols along with what they believed was God and saw him as just one of the gods. But they believe that they're worshiping God, that they are worshiping God.
Okay.
Following up on that, there was another element that created prejudice in the minds of the Jews toward the Samaritans. Of course, they didn't like the Samaritans, but after the period of captivity was brought back into the land during the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, the Samaritans said, well, we want to rebuild the temple with you.
Right.
And the reaction of the Jews was just in mixed paraphrase. You don't have anything to do with it. And the Samaritans then sought to weaken the hands of the people of Judah by soliciting the king about these people being troublemakers and all that kind of thing. So there is a history here that exists by the time we get to the New Testament that they just don't like each other.
Yes, and I have it on another slide, but I believe it's Ezra chapter 4.
Yes, 1 through 5 or something.
Are you going to read that?
Yes. Okay, Ezra chapter 4, beginning at verse 1. Now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity were building a temple unto Jehovah, the God of Israel, then they drew near to Zerubbabel and to the heads of the fathers' houses, and said unto them, let us build with you, for we seek your God as ye do, and we sacrifice unto him since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, who brought us up hither. But Zerubbabel and Joshua and the rest of the heads of the fathers' houses of Israel said unto them, ye have nothing to do with us in building the house unto our God. But we ourselves together will build unto Jehovah the God of Israel, as Cyrus the king of Persia hath commanded us. Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah, and troubled them in building, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus king of Persia, even under the reign of Darius king of Persia, and in the reign of Ahasuerus in the beginning of his reign, wrote they an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. And the substance of that letter that follows, if you read in the books of the history, you'll find these people have always been troublemakers. And Cyrus looked, or Darius looked into the books, and or Cyrus and found that that was true. They had been.
Right.
But then why are you building the king? Or the, I said Cyrus or Xerxes. Why are you building the house of God, rebuilding it in Jerusalem?
So
they said, look back, look further. You're right. That's what Cyrus told us to do.
Right. But emphasizing the verse you read there, verse 3, when Zerubbabel and Jeshua said to these Samaritans who said, we want to build with you, basically saying, we're just like you, so let us work with you. And Jeshua's and Zerubbabel's response was, no, you're not. You have nothing in common with us. And in fact, again, as Melissa mentioned, it was the Assyrians who took the northern 10 tribes away. Had even before the Assyrians took the 10 tribes away, had those northern 10 tribes been worshiping God according to the law? And in fact, as soon as Jeroboam had led the 10 tribes away, what was one of the first things he had done?
Calf worship.
Calf worship? Where? Dan and Bethel. So from the beginning, those 10 tribes that were taken away by Assyrian captivity, as Lisa talked, some of them were brought back then to mix with the Assyrians. Even since they had become the 10 tribes of Israel, they had not been worshiping God. Even, you know, it says Jeroboam had devised the worship in his own heart. And so, again, this whole aspect of the worship, their worship wasn't the worship of the law. And in terms of having something in common, it'd be like us sitting down with a denomination. Eventually, could you find maybe some little segment of some similarity between what the Samaritans knew and worshipped and the Jews in Judea? But it was Jeshua and Zerubbabel correct in saying, you have nothing in common with us? And again, as Mickey read that context, it was not only the Jews refusing to let the Samaritans help, saying, you don't have anything in common with us. But from there, it was back and forth. And again, okay, well, that's fine. Then we're going to do everything we can to disrupt your worship and so forth. And again, as we might say, it was on.
Yeah.
It was on.
I didn't understand for a long time in the study of the Samaritan woman, the statement made in verse 22, which probably now is an appropriate time to mention that Jesus told that Samaritan woman, ye worship that which ye know not. We worship that which we know, for salvation is of the Jews. The Samaritans, as we saw in the reading of Ezra, they claimed to worship God. They had built a temple in Mount Gerizim, but they didn't know anything about God.
Right. And again, hadn't for some time. But again, you know, if you go back to when Jeroboam led the 10 tribes away, that was, what, about 920 years before the time of Christ? If I'm doing the 1040, 10, 960, 920, yeah, it'd be about 920. So, I mean, for over 900 years, the northern 10 tribes hadn't known true worship. Much less when they were taken away and intermingled with the Assyrians. And as Moise pointed out, it just became worship of the God of heaven, which is another idolatrous God to them. So, indeed, we see the animosity again. There's history, right? We talk about the Jews and the Samaritans. There's history there. And a lot of it. And you could even read in Josephus and some others, again, of things that happened over time that could just continue to build the animosity and build the contempt and hatred that they had for one another. Again, it wasn't simply kind of like the Hatfields and McCoys of one particular instance that happened 900 years ago, and it was just that one alone. But again, it's just a whole history of things that happened between the Samaritans and the Jews that created this attitude. But again, Jesus is going to walk through Samaria, and he's going to stop in the city of Sychar. But when we think about Jesus, he had a lot to do with the Samaritans during his ministry. This really is the first opportunity we see of Jesus interacting with the Samaritans, but it's not the only time. Not the only time we talked about them.
I was just thinking, in many ways, the Samaritans are treated as their own class of people in the Scriptures. You know, we have Jews and Gentiles. Where do the Samaritans fit in there?
They were no man.
They were what?
No man's land.
No man's land. Yeah, because they're Jews, but they're Gentiles. They're really kind of both. They're married with.
Right.
But Jesus was willing to talk to them. And Jesus said, I was sent here to talk to the Jews. And the apostles were given the command to go to the Gentiles. It's just an interesting case.
It is interesting. Let's take a look at some of these passages up here about Jesus and his interaction with the Jews. If you read in John chapter 9, beginning in verse 51, in the Gospel of John, all written by Luke 9, Jesus is preparing himself to head back to Jerusalem. You see there in verse 51, it says, "Now when the days were approaching for his ascension." In other words, already by Luke chapter 9, during his ministry, Jesus, it's about the fullness of time. It's about time. It says in verse 51, he was determined to go to Jerusalem, and he sent messengers on ahead of him, and they went and entered a village of the Samaritans to make arrangements for him. But they did not receive him because he was traveling toward Jerusalem. When his disciples James and John saw this, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" Did his apostles have some of this attitude toward the Samaritans? They didn't receive us. They wouldn't let us come through. And so, Jesus, let's just destroy them. Just send fire down from heaven and consume them. This was their approach towards dealing with the Samaritans. The Samaritans, on their part, was like, "No, we don't want you coming through here. Because we know where you're going." In fact, the Samaritans didn't even want these Jews to be passing through on their way to Jerusalem. "No, we don't want you. We know where you're going." If you'll turn the page or pages to John chapter 10. How about Luke chapter 10? Thank you. And in verse 33, beginning in verse 30, we read about what is called the parable of the what? Good Samaritan. But it's interesting, even with all this animosity, again, we hear in John chapter 4, we have Jesus again stopping, going through Samaria, talking with this woman. And in the Good Samaritan, Jesus makes the point in trying to teach who is my neighbor and answer that question. He uses the example of a Samaritan who did the right thing, who again provided the relief. Verse 33, "But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion and came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. And he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And on the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I return, I will repay you.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands?" It's interesting enough that they say the Samaritan. Who did they say? The one who showed mercy. And Jesus said, "Go and do the same." Jesus uses a Samaritan as the example of how we're to be a neighbor to somebody else. And when asked who provided the neighborly care that I'm calling upon you, it's interesting, they wouldn't even say the Samaritan. Jesus said it was the Samaritan. But in their response, well, they said, the one who showed mercy. It's almost like they couldn't even say, "Well, yeah, it was a Samaritan who did the right thing." I find that interesting. But Jesus, again, took the opportunity in Luke chapter 17 and verse 16. Anybody remember the context there in Luke chapter 17 and Jesus' use of mentioning a Samaritan? Okay, the 10 lepers. And they had cried out for mercy. "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." He told all 10 to do what?
Show yourselves to the priest.
Go show yourselves to the priest. And when they had obeyed that, what happened to all 10? They were cleansed. And then we read about just how many of them. Just one who came back to give glory and praise to God. And then Jesus says, what about that one? And he was a Samaritan. And again, what's it's kind of like with the Good Samaritan. Making the point that it was the Samaritan who had enough gratitude and understanding for the healing that he had received. It was the Samaritan who went back to worship and praise God and to thank him. And again, what was the question asked about the nine who... It's not mentioned, but it's almost Jesus points out that it was the Samaritan who did this. But what about the nine? What did Jesus say about them?
Where are they?
It was the Samaritan who came back. So although Jesus understood the animosity and the relationship that Samaritans and Jews had, it was Jesus who repeatedly pointed out that Samaritans could be the ones who could provide the example of what we should do, being a good neighbor, of worshiping and praising God as we should. Here in John chapter 4, again, we see Jesus dealing with not just a Samaritan, but what do we read later on in verses 39? Thank you, Chris.
He's teaching us way back here that God is not a respecter of persons.
Yeah.
But it's the attitude that what you do that counts.
Right.
It's not your statue as a Jew.
And so the fact that Jesus would use the Samaritan, like, even it's the Samaritan who was the good neighbor. It was the Samaritan who came back to give worship and praise to God. Yes, making the point that, again, who can worship God? Well, anybody can. Who can be a good neighbor and provide, you know, the mercy and compassion to other people? Why do we need to follow after the Samaritan example? Absolutely. And you're right, Chris. I think that's the ultimate point here. But in John chapter 4, again, if you drop down to 39 and 40, was this woman the only Samaritan that Jesus interacted with?
No.
The whole town came out. And when we get there again, I that's what a great example in terms of we talked about, you know, Andrew, when he realized that it was the Messiah, what did he do? Went and found Peter. I gotta tell somebody. We're gonna get to the point in this study when this woman realized that who she was talking to was the Messiah. She didn't just go get her brother. As Richard pointed out, she went and got the whole town. She went and told everybody. And we'll talk about how the town came out because of what she said, but we'll get there. So, again, Jesus had a history with the Samaritans, but it's interesting how that he used the Samaritans to talk about what all of us are responsible for in terms of our service unto God and unto each other. So then going back to John chapter 4, Jesus comes to a town called Sychar. Is that?
I think it's Sychar.
Sychar?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the modern city of Askar. I have a PC study Bible, the map already. Now, we read there in verse 4, again, verse 5, so he came to a city of Samaria called Sychar and came to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. It's interesting, a little bit of context there. This parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph, would that have meaning to those in Jerusalem? Did that have meaning to these Samaritans also?
They took it upon themselves, yeah.
Yeah. What does it say in verse 12? What did the woman say in verse 12 regarding Jacob? is interesting.
She said herself, greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drink thereof himself, and his sons, and his cattle.
So, is interesting. What did she say about Jacob?
Well, that he was their father.
Their father also. That again, even these Samaritans were looking back and said, well, and did they come through the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Again, those were Jews originally, but they got intermingled with the Assyrians. But she points back to our father Jacob. She's still claiming a lineage from Jacob. And so when he comes to this well, that again Jacob gave to his son Joseph, that Jacob's well was there. And we see again the reference to the field that Jacob bought and gave to his son Joseph in Genesis chapter 33 and verse 19. But I want to get on to focus right now, and not unless somebody wanted to necessarily spend some time talking about Jacob giving that parcel of land. I wanted to move on to talk about, again, what happened when Jesus came to this well. And it says he went to Jacob's well wearied from his journey. We don't know what time of year it is, but we do know, and you probably, I don't think anybody in this room has actually been over there to the Holy Lands. We've studied about the history and geography of that land. What was it like? Can we possibly imagine what it meant to journey from Jerusalem to Galilee?
Hot and
torrid. Yeah. It's a
dusty, probably.
Dusty, dirty, hot.
This is mountainous coastal plain. It's relatively green. It's
okay.
A little bit on the drier side, but it's not a desert.
But we do know when again, what was the common custom when somebody traveled by foot somewhere? John chapter 13, Jesus did what to the... Wash their feet. Again, to travel at that point in time, they didn't have boots, nice, you know, footwear. They had sandals. And it was, whether in the mountainous region or in the deserts, it was, traveling was a laborious task. And again, Jesus is traveling how?
My foot.
And approximately how many miles from Jerusalem up to the Sea of Galilee? Going back to our 150?
No, it looks like at least 50. Maybe 75.
So it'd be about the same as walking from here down to downtown Los Angeles. It's about 75 miles. And if you had been walking all day from here down to Los Angeles, I think you'd get a little hot and tired. All right? So it says, yeah. That'd be tough. It, you know, again, imagine just trying to walk home tonight.
I wouldn't make it. Come and pick me up.
And it says it was the sixth hour. Is this first thing in the morning?
Not hardly. It's either in the middle of the day or at the end of the day.
Depends on whether you're Jewish time, it would be noontime. Roman time, it would be 6 o'clock in the evening. So either it was a high noon, or it was at the end of the day. And one way or the other, he had been traveling for some distance. And I just wanted to stop and at least take this moment to point out, Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah, the Promised One, eternal, again, in the flesh. Do we not see again a picture of the humanity of Jesus? In terms of, again, his weariness. And where did we see already in our study of the life of Christ that when Jesus dealt with the physical challenges of life, that he dealt with them the same way that you and I do? Where did we study that?
In chapter 3.
In Matthew 4. The temptations of Christ. When Satan came to Jesus and tempted him to turn these stones into bread, deal with your hunger in a supernatural way. Use your divine power. to alleviate your physical circumstances, and Jesus refused. Man should not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Jesus would not allow Satan to tempt him to use his divine power to deal with the physical challenges and temptations of the flesh. When Jesus traveled from Jerusalem to Galilee, he did so on foot. He got tired just like we got tired. He got weary just like we would get weary. And he again dealt with life in the flesh as we do as well. And so we see then in John chapter 4 that being wearied from his journey, he was sitting thus by the well. And it was about the sixth hour. Now, wells at that point in time, we don't understand the concept of wells, perhaps. I never lived anywhere where we had to use well water, much less a community well, as it were. Did everybody have their own well in their own backyard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But for the majority of people, did they, again, have their own individual access to water?
No.
No. And interestingly enough, those who did not have their own wells, they would have to go to use, as it were, the public well. And this is a well where people would come to draw their own water. And we'd ask the question that as you sit by a place where those, the common folks, would come to get water, eventually, what would invariably happen if Jesus sat by the well long enough?
Somebody's
going to come. Somebody's going to come. Is there a lesson to be learned here in terms of if we have a desire to teach others the gospel? Do we go to where we know the people are going to be at? In fact, we were reading at home last night from Acts chapter 16 when Paul went to the city of Philippi. What did he do? He found out there was a place of prayer. He's going, that's where I'm going to go. What did Paul often do when he went to a city? Evidently, Philippi may not have had a
synagogue.
Because wherever there was a synagogue, that's where he went. And if you went to a synagogue back in that time, you'd run into other people, wouldn't you? People who you knew had a spiritual interest. Here in the city of Sychar, he comes to a well where you know there's going to be people. And interestingly enough, what happens? Verse 7, there came a woman of Samaria to draw water. That's what people do at the well. And Jesus said to her, give me a drink. We read that, just the words, Jesus said to her, give me a drink. We're going to find out what's remarkable about that verse. I'm sorry? Who initiated this?
He did.
Jesus, a Jewish man, began the conversation with a Samaritan woman. It's not what Jewish men did at that point in time. And was the woman surprised that Jesus would address her?
Almost upset.
Yeah. I think that might have ever happened to her in her life before. Probably the first time ever a Jewish man had walked up to her and asked her for a favor. So we will continue in our study in John chapter 4 next week as we talk about the fact that, again, Jesus is going to take a woman who is living life in the flesh and thinks fleshly, and he's going to introduce spiritual concepts to her, just like he did with Nicodemus, trying to get her to, again, set her minds on the things above and to think spiritually, not physically. So thank you for your participation.